From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, December 30th, 2008. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends in the geospatial marketplace. This is Adina Schutzberg in Somerville, Massachusetts, and Joe Francica has the week off. This week, I want to take a look at some top 10 lists, some from the geospatial technology world, but I really want to focus on those from the broader technology space. And I think what's on both of them reveal quite a lot about where geospatial is as we come to the end of 2008. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by ESRI. Quickly get your imagery to the people who need it with ArcGIS Server Image Extension. For more information, visit www.esri.com/image.
Now, the plan for this podcast is to take a quick look at some of the geospatial publications' top 10 or year-end discussions, and then to focus really on the technology industry's top 10s and see where geospatial fits. So first, let me note that I wrote my own top 10 list earlier this year, and even though I've put one together for the past 7 years, when I sat down to write this year's, it just didn't feel right, and I ended up not writing a top 10 list, but rather explaining why I think it's becoming more and more difficult to put together a top 10 list. And let me just quote myself here. And I wrote, "I think the diversity of uses and users, from those who match up to those creating new spatial algorithms for vector and raster data, reinforces that we are less likely now, perhaps than ever, to point to the same big events, launches, trends." Unquote. Because what I really think is going on is that our uses and our interests and our applications of geospatial are so broad that to identify 10 things that are going to have had an impact for everyone across this field of geospatial is less and less meaningful. I mean, it's a good exercise to try to do it. I think it's just becoming more and more difficult. So maybe that's a cop-out, but that was the basics of what I wrote for my top 10 for 2008. But let's look at what some of the other folks in the industry talked about in their year-end or top 10 lists. So next up, I want to look at the top 10 list from Vector One. And that was a very interesting list. Of the 10 elements in it, 6 were vendor-related. They were software products or APIs or new satellites that are in the sky. And the other 4 were government initiatives of some sort or initiatives from nonprofits, in particular the OGC. And I thought that list was really interesting for 2 reasons. First up, the authors chose not to define how they selected these 10 particular things, what criteria were used, or what, in fact, this was a list of. Was it the most important? Was it the newest, the ones that we were going to have the greatest impact? That wasn't clear, and sometimes it's nice to leave that out because it gives you a lot more breadth. The other thing I think is important about that list is that it really highlights how commercial products on the one hand and what's going on in the public sector, be it sort of the EU government or the UN, one of the initiatives is from the UN, is having perhaps more bearing or is becoming more important in what we're doing within geospatial. So that was a very interesting list. Now, over at GeoWorld, they have a different tradition at the end of the year, and they put together an industry outlook where they ask a number of prominent individuals to provide their input on the state of things. Now, I couldn't find that article in HTML, but it is available to read in their flipbook format, and I'll have a link to that in the show notes. This turns out to be quite an endeavor because if you've got 21 people potentially commenting on a whole series of topics, it's quite a lot of text. So what they do is they select a subset of that to print the magazine, and the rest of it's available online. Now, the 4 topics that were covered in the actual issue were the economy, spatial analysis, remote sensing, and emerging technologies, and they had 21 different people commenting on these. And it's quite far-reaching and quite an extensive discussion. And instead of commenting on it, what I want to do is have someone else comment on it, and in particular comment on the remote sensing bit of this piece. This analysis comes from Jalath O'Neill Dunn, who works at the Spatial Analysis Lab at the University of Vermont. And this was his take on reading the remote sensing Outlook discussion. And he says in his blog, I was a bit disappointed in the interviews, as most just gave the usual spiel about all the satellites that were operational or assumed to be operational. I think we are starting to reach the point at which high-resolution imagery is losing the wow factor. Statements like, that's great, I can see my neighbor's car, but how is this imagery helping me make better decisions, are already starting to surface and will continue as budgets tighten. Purchasers of remotely sensed data will want to see a return on their investment and not spend six figures just so the maps their GIS shop produces have nice background imagery. They will want answers to their key questions. For example, what is the distribution of impervious surfaces by land use in our city? Or how much room do we have to plant trees on parkland? In short, they will want actionable intelligence, not just imagery. Unquote. And he goes on to quote Ron Lake, who sort of says that while we have all this imagery, we're not sort of keeping up with the ability to take that information and turn it into something actionable. And he hit the nail on the head for me, because that was one of the reasons that I was hesitant to put the latest and greatest new satellites in my top 10 list. Because at one level, they're sort of more of the same. We're sort of heading down the path we've been heading. Resolutions are higher. Processing time is getting lower. Coverage is getting better. All of those things are happening. But at the same time, how we're using the imagery isn't necessarily keeping up with all of this imagery that we've got. So once we start seeing that, I think that will make a top 10 list, and maybe that's to come in the next couple of years. So I appreciate his input looking at that Outlook piece. Now let's switch gears a little bit and look at some top 10 lists from the technology space. In the past couple of months, I've become quite enamored with a blog called Rewrite Web, which is usually among the top 20 blogs that are read. It's a tech blog put together by a team of people. And what they do for their top 10 is they don't write just one top 10, they write 10 top 10s. And those 10 include the top 10 semantic web products, the top 10 international products, consumer web apps, RSS and syndication products, mobile web products, enterprise web products, real-world web products, digital lifestyle products, alternative search engines, and web platforms. And these are all very webby, so that certainly gives it a specific focus as opposed to a desktop kind of thing. But I think there's no doubt that the web is where the big drive is right now. So I think looking through those lists to find geospatial technologies is valuable. And when I did that, I was pleased that I found a couple of things that I had never heard of within those lists. But I also found some things that I think we would agree are very important within geospatial technology that made these sort of generic top 10 lists. So let's take a walk through those, and let me highlight some of the geospatial products. Now, in the semantic applications list is a service called TripIt. What that is, according to ReadWriteWeb in their top 10 list, is an app that manages your travel planning. With TripIt, you forward incoming bookings to a specific email address, and the system manages the rest. So basically, you send all those documents that you get from your travel agent or from the airline and the hotel and so forth, and it sorts out the mess of words and turns it into something valuable that you can then print up or share with others about where you are, where your hotel is, and so forth. Now, the semantic web is one of those topics that sort of comes and goes that we don't think about much, I think, in our day-to-day work. But this idea of being able to make sense of this big mishmash of terms, some of which are location-based, certainly with something like a travel site like TripIt, location, where you are, is going to be pretty important. And I think that's one we need to keep an eye on. Now, moving on to the international list, international is defined as outside of the U.S., but with particular uptake worldwide. There were two that had a geospatial sort of bent that I thought were interesting. One I've heard of, and that's Doppler, which allows you to share your travel plans with other people. That's based out of the U.K. and Finland. And the other one is called Wuala, and that comes out of Switzerland. And this one might take a minute to get your head around. And I think the best place for me to start in explaining it is if you think of SETI, the Search for extraterrestrial intelligence. And there's a that's a program where everybody can sort of contribute their own computer's dormant cycles when they're not using the computer to the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. So it sort of gathers up all these little bits of computing power all over the world to contribute to this greater good. Well, Ualla does the same thing, but it's a storage system. So instead of storing your content on an Amazon web service or a Google service or something, you sort of spread it out across all these little bits of hardware computing power all across the world. Now, there's probably security reasons that that's not going to work for everything, but it's a very clever use of storage space that's just out there and not being used. So we'll have to see how that all plays up and how that integrates with this idea of a cloud. In the consumer list, I didn't find anything geospatial. In the RSS and syndication list, I didn't find anything geospatial. But I do want to note that the folks at ReadWriteWeb included in the RSS and syndication list two not new technologies, but two that still made the list because they're still so valuable. One was FeedBurner, which is now owned by Google, and that's a tool to create RSS feeds from blogs and other kinds of sites. And Yahoo Pipes, which is a tool to build your own tools out of RSS feeds and other web resources. Now, both of those have been around for a couple of years and are widely used. ReadWeb notes that they haven't really had much innovative development in the past year, but they're still so important that they need to be on the list. And that's a situation I fell into in looking at my top 10 list, that a lot of things were things that were still useful, still valuable, but really hadn't made significant changes or significant leaps forward in 2008. So I think they were in a lot of ways in the same situation I felt I was. Moving on to the mobile list. On that list was Google Maps, and I think it was right near the top. And Google Maps was specifically highlighted for two reasons. One, that it's not just Google Maps. Now it also includes Street View, which many people have suggested. Street View is incredibly valuable while you're walking down the street, so you know you're exactly in the right place. And remember, Street View are those photographs of what's going on along the street, not just the road itself, right? What's on either side. And the fact that Google Maps is available for all the major mobile platforms, Android and BlackBerry and iPhone and Java-based solutions. So that's really made a huge impact, and I would have to agree with that one. The other service that they mentioned is BrightKite. And BrightKite, I'm going to quote them, is the service, a device-agnostic SMS-based application, lets you check in at various locations out of the real world and then see who else is there, has been there, and who is nearby. You can check in via text, web, or iPhone, but text is easiest if you're using a traditional cell phone, unquote. So BrightKite is a service that puts your location out there and allows you to find the location of others. I see it a lot used with Twitter. People use it as the resource to post their locations. And there's a lot of services that do sort of the same thing, but BrightKite seems to be poking its nose up above the fray. The enterprise list didn't really have anything inherently geospatial. And I'm going to move on to the real world list. And that's the list of web technologies that are valuable for sort of your real life as opposed to your work life. And one of the services that's mentioned just popped onto my radar. I wrote about it in All Points blog this past week. Is a social network for doctors called Sermo, and they're based here outside of Boston. And that wasn't interesting or inherently geospatial up until this past week when they announced that they were going to have a sort of flu prediction tool. This is only for doctors, not for everybody else. But the idea is that doctors would share information about their diagnosis of the flu with location information, map that, and use that as a tracking tool. And that's very interesting because it sort of comes on the heels of some other tools that pull flu information, say, from newspapers and other resources on the web. It comes on the heels of Google's recent announcement of its flu tracker just based on who's querying about the flu and where are they from to try to make sense of either where epidemics have been or where they might appear. So that was a very interesting one. The digital lifestyle list didn't really have anything nor did the alternative search engines list. I was sort of hoping that there would be a local search engine that would pop up in that list. There wasn't one this year. Now, the final category of web platforms included a couple that were inherently geospatial. And maybe this is sort of a trend that our platforms are getting smarter in the sense that they've got all the guts in them to do geospatial things. So on that list was the iPhone SDK, Google's Android platform, and FireEagle. And I really have to give the folks at ReadWriteWeb credit for putting FireEagle on this list. You could consider it a web platform. It sort of fits in so many different places. But the fact that they highlight it, I think, is important. FireEagle came out of Yahoo, and Yahoo, alas, has announced that they're going to be shutting down Brickhouse, which was the sort of labs part of Yahoo that FireEagle came out of. Now, they've made statements that FireEagle's fine, it's not going anywhere, but I have to say, I'm nervous, and I don't want it to die, and I hope it stays at Yahoo, but if it can't, it should end up somewhere else. But the fact that ReadWriteWeb identifies it as being that important, and frankly, FireEagle is one of the few things that came out this year that really matters. Yeah, it was announced in March, it became publicly available in August, and part of its challenge, I think, is it's not the same, it's not a location-based service, it's not a storage system. In and of itself, it doesn't do anything, but it's a broker. It's a way of managing your location information, however it's collected, and deciding to where it gets to be delivered. So that's sort of complicated to explain, but I think it's an absolutely key thing that we need as we move forward in this world of location-based services. So that's my wrap-up of some top 10 lists, and I think just looking at the geospatial ones and then looking at the, in a sense, non-geospatial ones to see which things have geospatial content is a valuable exercise, and hopefully there's a couple of things you've heard that you want to go check out. And again, references to all the top 10 lists, to all the products that I mentioned, are in the show notes. Before I go, I have a message from our sponsor, ESRI, and ESRI encourages you to subscribe to the new ESRI Training Matters blog to stay up to date on ESRI's training and education products and to get practical tips for working with ESRI technology. ESRI offers a variety of self-study and instructor-led to suit your learning style, schedule, and budget. Subscribe to the ESRI Training Matters blog at blogs.esri.com. Joe and I will be back in the new year. Happy New Year to all of our listeners, and be sure to tell a friend.